What's up, Pels fans? Welcome back to The Bird Call. This is a podcast dedicated to SB Nation's TheBirdRights.com. Now, today we are talking Ian Clark with a very special guest, Mason Ginsberg of Bourbon Street Shot. So let's get right to it. Mason, thank you so much for taking the time. How are you today, sir?
I'm doing well. Thanks for inviting me on.
Oh my gosh, thank you again for coming on. I talked to Mason about 2 months ago, so I'm so excited to have you back on. We have some exciting news to get to, as reported by Shams of the Vertical. But first, you guys, don't forget to give Mason a follow at Mason Ginsberg, and you can find all of his work on bourbonstreetshots.com, including his newest article discussing Chris Finch's interview with Chris Gordy of Sports 1280. A lot of really good stuff talking about how guys on offense will need to sacrifice, how he's really promoting transition, positionless basketball, really interesting stuff. Make sure you go and check that out. But Mason, let's talk Ian Clark. A lot of us had him as a candidate for the full mid-level this offseason, and some even argued that Steve Kerr was purposefully playing Patrick McCaw over him in order to keep his free agency interest low. The Lakers were said to be interested by the Los Angeles Times. And at that point, it seemed likely that he might return to Golden State at the minimum after that was rebuffed by the same people. But then the Warriors used their mid-level on Nick Young, whom the Pelicans were said to be super close to signing. And then they used the veteran minimum on former Pelican Omri Caspi, clearing the path for Ian Clark to join the Pelicans. Mason, is this 6 degrees of separation or what?
Yeah, it just goes to show you how fluid markets are in the offseason, because I didn't have him at the full mid-level, but I definitely thought he would get more than the minimum. And, you know, he probably could have got more than the minimum somewhere. He could have gotten someone's part of someone's exception. But you know, I think markets just change as the offseason progresses. And the Pelicans took advantage, and they must have sold him on an important role with this team. Obviously, he took a one-year deal because he's betting on himself and thinks he can make more money in the next offseason. Obviously, it's going to be a very there have already been things written about how tight next summer is going to be for some free agents hoping to make it big. But you know, I like the fit. I think getting him for the minimum is obviously great. He's a great shooter. It's the one thing I've stressed. I didn't get to watch him a ton, apart from obviously the times Golden State was on national TV, which was admittedly a lot. But he's definitely a good shooter. That's the one thing I've been you know, kind of harping on. He made 42.5% of his threes in college on 800 attempts, which is pretty darn impressive. And then he's shot well in the NBA, career 80% free throw shooter. Just a lot of numbers point to the fact that he's going to do really well for the Pelicans beyond the arc. But the big question is what else he can bring to the team in a backup role.
Definitely. I was listening to Danny LaRue and Nate Duncan, and they're pretty low on him, actually. They label him as just a fantastic spot-up shooter who doesn't offer a little bit else. Before I get into that, I want to touch upon something that you mentioned. You mentioned the market changing with the salary cap being a bit lower than teams had anticipated going forward this year and years to come, we may see. But I wanted to talk to you a little bit about, based on that, the last time we spoke, we talked about how Dell Demps seemingly saved his job with the DeMarcus Cousins trade, just unloading him for Buddy Hield and some salary cap fodder and a future first round pick this season. Now we go forward. At the time, it was so astounding to see a superstar, potential top 10, top 20 player go for so little. And then this offseason, we've seen that happen again with Jimmy Butler, with Paul George, and now potentially with Kyrie Irving. Retracing your steps back to All-Star break, do you still see the DeMarcus Cousins as a major scorer, or do you just think this is what the market is nowadays?
No, it's still a major scorer. It's just, if you look at what the Pelicans had to offer from an asset perspective, I mean, that was it. I think what you've seen with some of these big, with these superstars going for maybe below market rates, is that GMs and front offices fall in love with certain players. And I think in the case of the Jimmy Butler trade, they were big fans of Chris Dunn and they wanted to get him. And so the package they got, they felt good with. I think it was a ripoff, but they like it. I'm not as sure with the Oklahoma City trade. They must have really liked either Oladipo or Sabonis. But I mean, I think that's more of what you're seeing. The Pelicans still absolutely had to make the trade that they did, and I think it was still a absolutely a great move for them. But yeah, I mean, I've been very surprised with some of the asking prices for the stars this offseason.
I mean, we don't need to go too much into Kyrie Irving, but many of the reports are the Suns as the likeliest candidate to be the partner in the swap, and Eric Bledsoe and Josh Jackson being the counterparts to go along with that trade. And, you know, just from rumors and conjectures that the Suns seemingly aren't willing to part with Eric Bledsoe and Josh Jackson just seems unfathomable to me. I, you know, everybody always harps on how important it is to have a superstar, and these teams have the opportunity to get one and they seemingly won't pull the trigger. It's just very interesting how, like you said, the market is changing. But I do want to talk a bit about Boogie again before we get into Ian Clark. There was an interview by Chris Mannix in the Vertical this morning, and Boogie said, "I'm a firm believer that everything happens for a reason. A lot of things happen in our lives. We kind of think of it as a mistake or a bad time, or some people call it adversity, whatever the case may be. But I think the trade happened for the right reason, and I'm happy where I am. That sample size we got last season is the reason I'm so confident. I believe we can make it work. I think we're going to surprise a lot more people than people actually expect. For some reason, we're being counted out. That's okay. We're going to surprise a lot of people this season." Boogie has been said to be very active in recruiting for the Pelicans this offseason. How much of a factor do you think Boogie is having on these additions? And how positive of a sign is the Rondo Clark acquisitions for the Pelicans going forward in terms of re-signing Boogie?
I think he's definitely made a difference. We know from history and by his own admission, I can't remember, it was probably a year or two ago at this point, but AD isn't that much of a recruiter. He's more of a passive type of leader. Which is not a knock on him. I mean, everyone has their own role, and he does what he does on the court, and that should be enough to recruit many talented players. But yeah, I mean, I think it was pretty obvious the impact that Cousins had on bringing Rondo to New Orleans, and I think a lot of us were thinking that Rondo might get more than he ended up getting, and I think for the price, I wasn't a huge fan of the Rondo signing on day one, but for the money they got him for, I think it's fine, especially given the locker room presence that he provides. I mean, you saw Bobby Portis saying he called Rondo the best teammate he's had in his young career, which I think speaks volumes. And so yeah, I mean, I think Cousins definitely has made an impact, and he's definitely more of the vocal type, and that's something that New Orleans needed. And as far as the Ian Clark signing, I'm not sure. That could have been more along the lines of Gentry and Darren Erman. You just never know, or the role that was proposed to him. So a lot of different factors, especially again with Clark taking a 1-year deal, he probably wanted to find the situation that works best for him. And I think seeing a team with AD and Boogie down low, his eyes maybe got big for the chance to knock down some open shots and then make some more money next summer. So a lot of moving parts, but I think Cousins is definitely a part of it.
So we've got Rajon Rondo at 3.3, Ian Clark at 1.6, which I think is the veteran minimum. And then Crawford just became fully guaranteed at 1.7, a little bit more than Ian Clark. So how close are the Pelicans against the hard cap by your estimation? SpotRack has us at 118. What flexibility do they have going forward with one roster spot still available?
Yeah, so I've got him at 118 in salary. I've got him at around 123 in against the hard cap, and that's again because of all the incentives and the contracts that Dell Demps gave out. So particularly the Jrue Holiday contract. Solomon Hill hit his incentives last year, so they're gonna hit count towards the cap in the following year. So we have about $2 million to play with. Bobby Marks is 1.5, so just estimate somewhere between 1.5 and 2 million right now. So not a lot. I think if the Pelicans will either find someone for around the minimum and keep a little bit of wiggle room there for during the season if they need it. But the other option obviously is to move a contract and try to, because I mean, Dante Cunningham's still sitting out there with his bird rights. And so will he sign for the minimum? I kind of doubt it. I think he can get more than that, maybe not much more. But I think he's worth, you know, $3 to $4 million, given the available talent left and the cap space left for various NBA teams. But so I mean, obviously, I think the most likely, the easiest person to move, if the Pelicans don't think that Quincy Pondexter is going to be healthy from day one, they can attach some cash to him and move him and that, that'll give him some room out of the hard cap to bring back a guy like Dante Cunningham. But otherwise, they're pretty restricted at this point. They don't really have much they can do, assuming all the current players stay under contract for the Pelicans. There's not really much more they can do apart from add someone for the minimum or maybe slightly above.
Mason, take a moment to educate not just me, but also our listeners. I know the Pelicans still have the rights to two different trade exceptions. They've got the one that they acquired for Tim Frazier and the one of Buddy Hield. And I think the two of them are somewhere around $3.5 and $2 million. Should the Pelicans get pressed up against the hard cap and need to free up some space, is it possible that they renounce these two player exceptions and use that available space to bring somebody back like Dante Cunningham?
I mean, the exceptions aren't really up. They don't really matter in terms of the hard cap. I mean, if you can't go over the hard cap for any reason. So they really need to renounce them. The only way they would lose them is if they were operating under the cap this year, which obviously is not the case. So they can hang on to them. And if they say stretch Oshik's contract, or they are able to trade Ajinta and Pondexter, they can still use it to take on a player of that much money without having to send out anything in return. So they can still keep it in their back pocket. The Buddy Hield one for 3.6 or around there expires at the trade deadline. And then the Frazier one will expire next summer at some point. So, cause they expire 1 year after the trade is made. So, they'll have them if they want to use them. At this point, using it seems unlikely, but you never know. If they shed some salary, they can they can keep it and use it if the opportunity presents itself.
Great. We'll circle back to Dante Cunningham in a minute, because I do want to touch upon the Pelicans' seeming need of a third big. But for now, let's talk Ian Clark, and let's talk about his role with the Pelicans. In the playoffs, he's utilized mostly as a spot-up shooter and an under-the-backboard cutter, a lot of movement, averaged 37% from three, a great shooter, like you said. His most impressive performance came in a battle of the backups between Golden State and San Antonio, where he scored a career-high 36. Though he's listed as a point guard, I've never really seen him handle those responsibilities against like starter level competition. Do you see Ian Clark as the Pelicans' third point guard behind Rajon Rondo and Jrue Holiday? Or do you see him battling for spot up wing minutes with Etuan Moore, Jordan Crawford, and Darius Miller?
I really look at, apart from Rajon Rondo, I look at the Pelicans' entire backcourt of guards as just a bunch of combo guards. And so I'm not really putting players in a pecking order for point guard or shooting guard. I think what you're going to see is Rondo the starting point guard and Holiday the starting shooting guard. Then you've got Etuan Moore and Ian Clark and Jordan Crawford, who are all three of those guys are combo guards. I think the pecking order will be, Moore as the first guard off the bench and Ian Clark with him. And I think the odd man out right now, in my opinion, is Crawford, just because he's just a wasteland on defense. I mean, we saw it last year. And for as much as he helped the team offensively, he has trouble guarding anyone. So, while Ian Clark's no stout defender himself, I think that he'll get first shot. But you never know. I mean, I think the point is the Pelicans now have five legitimate combo guards, with Rondo maybe being the exception as only a point guard on offense, but he can certainly, if he's engaged and motivated, he can guard the two guard as well with that crazy wingspan he has. So I think that was the point, is getting a bunch of guys who can really play both spots and play with each other and surround Cousins and AD with guys who can not just handle it but shoot it as well. And I know that it's not really the case with from a shooting perspective for Rondo. It is the case for the rest of those guys to be at least average to above average from beyond the arc. And the question is, now we got to get guys to be ready to fire whenever they get those looks.
Yeah, and this definitely goes back to the article you posted on Bourbon Street Shots, where Chris Finch was quoted as saying that he didn't want to assign people to positions. He wanted positionless basketball. However, both Gentry and Finch are on the record stating that Rondo and Holiday will man the backcourt together. They'll sort of take turns commanding the offense, although we should see a lot of staggering between them. Rondo last year averaged about 25 minutes. Holiday has never averaged more than 33 minutes as a Pelican. That should leave about 38 minutes for, as you said, Etuan Moore, Jordan Crawford, and Ian Clark to fight over. However, circling back to Dante Cunningham, right now behind Boogie and AD, the Pelicans are kind of on tepid ground with, Cheick Diallo, who has shown a lot of promise, but still lacking a lot of awareness defensively. and then Ajinsa, and then Ashik, who still isn't recovered from his illness spelling all the way back to February of last season. It was online today that he couldn't play for Turkey because he was still fighting that illness. Could this be an indication that outside of the starting closing lineups, the Pelicans will be playing a lot of three guard small lineups, like you said, with Solomon Hill possibly manning the four?
I think three guard makes a lot of sense at this point. I mean, you look at what, for example, Houston did last year. They played a lot of three guard lineups and played Ariza at the four a decent amount with either Capella or Anderson manning the five. And so, well, obviously it's not the same kind of offensive firepower that Houston had. It's this kind of the same thought process. I think you'll see it a lot. Diallo, I see him playing maybe a dozen minutes a game, and you need to find that. That the extra minutes somewhere I think when AD and Cousins aren't playing together, you'll see one of them at center. You could see one of them with three guards and Hill, like you said, Hill playing some small ball four. I do think that's a gap for Dante Cunningham that because I do like him in that role. I think he can still help this Pelicans team. It's just a question of whether or not they can make that space at minimal cost to them. So I think it's not by any means I don't think this roster is completely finished at this point, because they still have that last roster spot to fill out, and they have to figure out how it's going to be done. But I'm not as concerned about the front court, the backup front court. I mean, Ajinsa is fine for a few minutes a game. I mean, as your fifth big, he's okay. As your fourth big, you're pushing it a little bit, especially when you already have AD and Cousins as two centers on the roster. But I think the Pelicans have given themselves a lot of options by having a decent amount of talent in the backcourt now, especially with the Clark signing.
Just to touch on Dante one final time, he's an active defender who can get out on the wing. He was the Pelicans' best shooter from three-point range last year, averaging 40%, although we all have that classic memory of him missing three corner threes in a row. Are you concerned at this point in the summer? Not concerned. I shouldn't say concerned. Maybe surprised is a better term, that the Pelicans have not reached an agreement with him or carved out the space to bring him back. He seems like he fits what the Pelicans have left remaining needs for pretty perfectly.
Yeah, I, at this point, it's easy to say that. But, looking back a couple months ago, for example, the one sure thing that New Orleans had was the front court. It was Davis and Cousins, and they needed, they needed some playmaking in the backcourt. They needed some shooting to help them, help those two big guys. And while Dante Cunningham was a sniper from the corner, it's just one season's worth of data, and he's not going to be a guy who really stretches the defense. They're not going to rush out to guard him and leave those two big men down low. And while he certainly helps and fills a need as like that 3-4 kind of combo forward, kind of like Solomon Hill, he wasn't going to be the first priority. He never was. And so the fact that he's still unsigned, you could read a few things into it. You could read into the fact that maybe the New Orleans has had conversations with him and have even communicated him what they think they'll be able to pay him if they can unload maybe say Pondexter salary if they think he's not going to be ready, but maybe he just hasn't gotten the kind of interest in free agency that maybe he was hoping. And so we'll see. And I do think he fits as a piece for to kind of round out this roster at a reasonable cost, but gotta make a move to make that happen.
So Quincy Pondexter, someone you just touched upon, who we really can't count on for meaningful minutes, and we might end up dumping at some point anyway, a cost-cutting move for some team in the NBA. However, Gentry called him a very good player, a very important player. Del Demps said he would be a wonderful free agent acquisition. But Gentry contradicted himself on the Duncan Holder, saying we need another guy at small forward. Maybe Q can play, but we can't count on that. Someone is going to want to get on board, speaking for free agencies at a whole. We still have one remaining roster spot left, and we've talked at length about Dante Cunningham, and whoever the 15th guy is may not see the floor at all. It might be a nice spot to, take a flyer on somebody like a Charles Cook, who just signed a two-way contract, so seemingly he'd be fine there. But Darius Miller was given a portion of the MLE to spot up, shoot, and defend the three. And Solo, whom Gentry remarked played some of the best wing defense in the NBA, is penciled in as the starter. At this point of the offseason, do you think our wing depth in our backcourt and at small forward is set in stone?
I think that's the one thing that's kind of in question right now. Because, I mean, the front court's good, the backcourt's good. And now the wings. So I think you're going to, like we talked about before, you're going to see a lot of three guard lineups. So how important is it to really have another guy who can really be counted on for a bunch of minutes at the wing? I don't know how important it is. I mean, especially in how confident you are in Darius Miller. I am skeptical, but the team seems to like him. And some of the people who have been covering basketball overseas have had really good things to say about how he's produced over there. And so, hopefully he can fill a void and take up 10-15 minutes a game for New Orleans. But otherwise, they're going to have to figure something out, or they're going to have to play a lot of three-guard lineups because they really don't have anything else unless Pondexter surprises some people. So, a guy like Dante would be good to kind of fill that void, or Cook. I mean, I did like that two-way signing. So I think that's what training camp's for, mostly. I mean, because they know what they've got on either extreme, but it's time to figure out how to piece together that wing combination. If they're going to use a lot of guard play, or if they're going to if they think they can count on one of these guys they picked up at the end of free agency.
Well, Quincy and Solo definitely have no shortage of confidence. I don't know how much you follow these guys on Twitter and Instagram and keep up with any of their posts. I think it was about 2 weeks ago, Solo buried Graham McQueen on Twitter. I think he was making fun of him, saying Graham mentioned that he could shoot threes better than him. I didn't really keep up too much of it, but Solo chimed in and seemingly put him down. And of course, Quincy Pondexter is doing all these one-legged squats with, 185 pounds on his back. So both of these guys are feeling very kind of confident. They're both anticipating that they're going to have a good season. So that's encouraging to see. Do you follow any of this stuff on Twitter?
I mean, some of it. I Pondexter's been posting that stuff for a year, so I don't even bother paying attention to it anymore. It's great that he's working out, but until he plays a minute for New Orleans, even in a preseason game, I would take that a lot more seriously than some of the social media workouts he's posting. But with Hill, yeah, we had a lot of fun with that. We posted an RIP Graham McQueen post on Bourbon Street Shots, and a few of us said some words in memory of his Twitter presence, and it was pretty funny. It's all in good fun, and I love the confidence that Solomon Hill has, and I hope he's it was his first year with a really, really big role last year, and while he was good defensively, he kind of came up short on the offensive end. So hopefully he can take a step forward this season. I don't think we should expect it, but I think it would be a very, very pleasant surprise.
Now, for all this talk about the backcourt and the three guard lineups that we just discussed, we really never mentioned our second round pick, Frank Jackson. Does the Ian Clark signing promise a redshirt season barring injury for the Duke point guard?
I think so. I mean, he's a sixth guard at this point. I mean, if you look at how the Pelicans treated Diallo last year, I think you're going to see something similar. Maybe he gets if he's getting minutes, it's is probably the reaction, because that means that we have had a decent amount of injuries, or that things have gone up in flames and it's the end of the season. We're trying to get him some meaningful minutes. So I don't expect him to have much of an impact this season. I'm looking forward to seeing what he does in the D League. It's too bad that our D League team won't come into play until the next season. Cause it'd be great to have the Pelicans have their own team and have him running, their offensive game plan. That's okay. And I'm sure he'll be able to get some good run in the D League.
The second dunked on mention in this podcast, I was listening to their Western Conference preview and they gave the Pelicans an offseason grade of a D. They both agreed. Though it was recorded before the Clark edition, they cited the holiday overpay, the questionable fit with Rondo, and the lack of salary dumping. Post Ian Clark, what is your offseason grade for the Pelicans?
I'd say the Ian Clark signing makes a big difference, because before the Clark signing, I was wondering why the hell they triggered the hard cap. I mean, they've done nothing to really merit that. I didn't think Darius Miller. I mean, Rondo signed for what could have been the taxpayer MLE. Him and Frank Jackson kind of filled most of that up, and it seemed like, you know, Pelicans signed Darius Miller to and now trigger the hard cap. And so, but with the signing of Ian Clark, it makes it worth it for me. That's valuable rotation depth that they added for a very reasonable cost. So, I mean, I don't think the grade's great by any stretch. I mean, they did overpay Drew, not drastically so, but they did overpay him. The contract incentives that they put on this contract, that could hamstring them for years to come, in the sense of the hard cap, because he's going to have an extra $4 million in incentives every year that will, if they trigger the hard cap, that will apply towards the hard cap. And so that I don't love that move. I'm waiting to see what these incentives are, because if they're like, some of them are ridiculous, like, oh, for Omer Asik, for example, those incentives were like, all defense, like second team all defense, stuff like that, where it's like worth 250K, something that he obviously was never going to do. And so, but, you know, that has implications for the hard cap if you have, you know, if you get close to it. So I'd say overall, maybe B minus, C plus, something like that. I mean, I think they didn't have much that they could do going into the offseason if they were going to keep Drew. And based on that, they did fairly well with the limited wiggle room that they had. So, yeah, I think that's fair.
Last question. Anthony Davis said last week that he's tired of losing, which sent me into a full blown panic, because, you know, all of a sudden I'm looking down the line of this year and I see the Pelicans not making the playoffs and Boogie leaving and Anthony Davis saying he wants out, like all the other superstars are seemingly doing nowadays. However, with the additions of Darius Miller, Ian Clark, Rajon Rondo, and Chris Finch, do you think the losing stops this season?
I do. Obviously, the Western Conference depth is madness. It's worse, or I guess better than it's ever been. I still don't have them. I mean, I think they're around the seventh best team in the West right now. I think they're, you know, they're ceiling if everything clicks. I mean, they've got enough depth and they've got two, you know, they got one top five, top 10 player and one top 15 player. They were a top 10 defensive team last year. Their net rating in March was top seven in the league. I mean, this team, like Cousins said in the interview, like they have a sample size that is, you know, worth paying attention to in the entire month of March, after they kind of adjust to having Cousins in the lineup, and then before they shut everyone down, that's basically March right there. And I'm optimistic. I mean, the problem is again the Western Conference and how damn deep it is. And so seventh or eighth seed makes sense. The seventh seed is probably where I would put my money right now. But I mean, you could have a 50-win team miss the playoffs this year in the West. Like that's how deep this conference is. And so they'll win. I think between 45 and 50 wins is totally reasonable. Just the question is, how far does that get you? And, with a conference so stacked.
Yeah, I'm excited too. The last time we talked about how it does take time to mesh all these new personalities and these playing styles. And I definitely anticipate that adding Rondo to the mix, things could get bumpy the first week. However, when you see the excitement level on these guys, and I understand that I'm just getting excited in August, and you hear Boogie say things like, we're going to surprise a lot of people this season, you can't help but not be confident. And 45 to 50 wins sounds like a wonderful foundation going forward, and an opportunity to bring Boogie back. I think that's all it would take. And then seemingly we'd have to figure out a way to bring everybody else back, because we're going to be in the exact same position cap wise going into next season without, the bird rights to any of these guys. But Mason, thank you so much. This is my second time getting the opportunity to chat with you. I've been a follower and a fan for many years, so it's truly a pleasure. And I hope I can hit you up for a bit of your time again soon.
Yeah, absolutely. This was fun. I appreciate it, and I look forward to doing it again soon.
Before I let you go again, just tell our listeners a bit about your work on Bourbon Street Shots, obviously your article on Chris Finch, and what you've got coming up.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even want to take credit for that. That was a great interview that I got the heads up on, and just kind of took away my. I basically wrote it. That's just the highlights and what I found to be most interesting. So it was a really good interview. Recommend listening to the whole thing, about 15 minutes long. But I've been mostly cap focused this summer, trying to figure out what's going on with the. What the team is thinking from a financial perspective throughout the summer, and doing a little bit of basketball stuff as well, obviously figuring out who's going to play where and how the pieces all fit together. But August is definitely a slow month from an NBA perspective, but we have a lot to look forward to, and we'll as a site as a whole, we'll be active getting ready for the new season.
Mason, thanks again.
Yep, absolutely. Have a good one.
All right. Thank you again to Mason Ginsburg. You can follow him and the rest of his team at Bourbon Street Shots. And thank all of you for tuning in. The Ian Clark signing was an exciting and a very unexpected one, and I appreciate you guys taking some of your day to hear about it with us. A big shout out to thebirdrights.com and our chief and commander, Ollie Cassell. Be sure to visit the site and get all the latest in rumors, analysis, and all things Pelicans, including in-depth looks on new two-way acquisitions, Jalen Jones and Charles Cook. And don't go too far, because we will be back tomorrow afternoon with Christian Rivas of 16winsaring.com, followed by old man Ollie and Kevin on Friday. But for now, let's go, Pels.